From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, a concert of new songs by Loudon Wainwright. As Stephen Holden recently wrote in the New York Times, Wainwright's records have accumulated into an extended pop journal unprecedented in its confessional candor. The core of the new album examines family history with a directness and a pained honesty. It takes up a subject, child rearing, that most baby boom songwriters have unaccountably avoided, except when mistily celebrating a birth. A concert with Loudon Wainwright coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. The U.S. Special Envoy to Somalia, Robert Oakley, says he's optimistic about an upcoming meeting between two Somali faction leaders. NPR's Deborah Wong says the meeting was announced by the IDEED faction earlier today.
A representative of General IDEED announced that after 6 months of hard work, he had agreed to attend a meeting between his arch chief rival in the north of the city, Ali Mohammed, and that meeting will be presided over by U.S. Ambassador Robert Oakley. I don't think that it had anything to do with 6 months of hard work by General IDEED, but he was very quick to claim credit for it. And it's clear that the Americans are in some way blessing these two men who have divided this city and are responsible in some way for the famine in Somalia. They will sit down, meet together, as Robert Oakley has said. He will be an honest broker, and the two of them will have to sort out their differences. There is a dividing line in this city between north and south. There are people here who will not cross that line, and that will have to be sorted out before Mogadishu is a normal place.
NPR's Deborah Wong. The American commander of the operation arrived in Somalia today. He's Marine Lieutenant General Robert Johnston, who's setting up his headquarters in the U.S. Embassy compound. Marine patrols reported sporadic gunfire in Mogadishu, and a French unit killed two Somalis whose truck ran through a roadblock near the airport. Relief officials reported that a large convoy of Somali gunmen was spotted heading west from the inland city of Baidoa toward Ethiopia. U.S. Marines are scheduled to escort a convoy of food trucks from Mogadishu to Baidoa on Saturday. The Italian Parliament has approved the sending of Italian troops to Somalia as part of the United Nations operation. Francis Kennedy reports from Rome that the first contingent is due to leave tomorrow.
Italy will send a total of 2,500 troops from its army, navy, and air force. Parachute and assault battalions will be flown to Somalia tomorrow, and the first of five naval vessels are expected to reach Somalia within 10 days. Italy is also sending 13 helicopters to ensure food distribution to outlying areas. In today's vote in Parliament, the former communists abstained in protest against the policies of the present and past government towards Somalia. The Rome government poured millions of dollars of ill-advised development aid into its former colony during the regime of Siad Barre, much of which helped him to remain in power. Despite its colonial links, Italy has not had an active role in international efforts to resolve the desperate situation in Somalia. For National Public Radio, I'm Frances Kennedy in Rome.
Stock prices closed lower today on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost about 12 points to close at 3,312. Declines led advances by a slight margin. This is NPR News. President-elect Clinton made the first major appointments of the new administration today, naming Texas Senator Lloyd Benson as Treasury Secretary. Benson's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. Wall Street investment banker Roger Altman was named as Benson's top deputy. Clinton chose House Budget Committee Chairman Leon Panetta to head the Office of Management and Budget, and Alice Rivlin, a former director of the Congressional Budget Office, to serve as Panetta's deputy. Robert Rubin, a co-chairman of the investment firm of Goldman Sachs, has been named to head a new economic coordinating agency, the National Economic Council. In a further attempt to curb right-wing violence, the German government has banned a second neo-Nazi party. Deirdre Berger reports from Frankfurt.
After a recent ban on the German National Party, authorities today outlawed this 350-member German Alternative Party. The Interior Ministry said portions of the party's platform resembled Nazi ideology of the early 1930s. In an early morning raid in Cottbus, in the eastern section of Germany, police searched the apartment of party leader Frank Hübner. They confiscated neo-Nazi propaganda material. There were also house searches of other party members in three other German states. The German Alternative Party, which was founded in the western part of Germany, has been gaining popularity among disaffected East German youth. Interior Minister Rudolf Seider said he might ban additional neo-Nazi groups. Yesterday, the German cabinet asked the Constitutional Court to strip two neo-Nazi leaders of basic civil rights. For National Public Radio, this is Dieter Berg in Frankfurt.
After weeks of uncertainty, Yugoslav Prime Minister Milan Panic has won the right to challenge Slobodan Milosevic for the presidency of Serbia. Panic is a naturalized American citizen who's pledged to work for peace. Milosevic is accused of supporting ethnic Serbs fighting in Bosnia and Croatia. I'm Corey Flintoff. This is National Public Radio News from Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Jerry Gross. When Loudon Wainwright started performing in the late 60s, he was touted as the new Bob Dylan, the Woody Allen of folk, the Charlie Chaplin of rock, and the male Melanie. Surviving all that is just one sign of his resilience. I like what our rock critic Ken Tucker said about Wainwright. He said, Wainwright writes autobiographical music that is never self-absorbed, social commentary that is never self-righteous, and lovely melodies that are never merely pretty. Loudon Wainwright has a new album called History. We invited him to perform and talk about some of his new songs. Most of the songs on this new record are about his relationships with his three children, their two different mothers, and his late father. I asked Loudon Wainwright if this was, excuse the expression, a concept album.
In the previous record, which was a record called Therapy, there were a lot of kind of family-orientated songs also, but it just seemed that this batch was, you know, such a preponderance of those kind of songs that we were even going to call it Family Album for a while until we found out that the Partridge Family had an album out called Family Album, and I said, no. So we called it History, but a lot of family songs.
Let me ask you to do the song I'd Rather Be Lonely.
Okay, you got it. Every night I get the blues, greens and yellows and chartreuses. You're still living here with me. I'd rather be lonely. All the time I look around for excuses to leave town. Everybody wants somebody, but I'd rather be lonely. Loneliness is happiness, yes, it takes less than two. I confess that I digress from it when I'm with you. Let's us make a brand new start. Separate and stay apart. I've had enough having and holding, and I'd rather be lonely. I think that I need some space. Every day you're in my face. How can I get rid of you? I'd rather be lonely. Loneliness is happiness, yes, it takes less than two. I confess that I digress from it when I'm with you. One more verse, a few more words. Love is for the bees and birds, not for a human being like me. I'd rather be lonely.
Who is this song written about?
Well, actually, it wasn't. It would seem like it was written for a romantic love interest, but it was written for my then 14-year-old daughter, Martha. She was living with me that year. Prior to that, she'd been living with her mom up in Canada, and we decided to have her come down and spend a year with Dad. And boy, it was kind of a heavy-duty year. Resulted in a number of songs, actually. It was difficult because we were really strangers. Her mother and I had split up when she was about 2 months old. And, you know, I had done the summer vacation, Christmas vacation, father thing. But we really didn't know each other. So it was kind of a crash course, emphasis on the word crash, stuff.
Was that your first experience being a full-time father of a teenager?
Of a teenager. I have another daughter that I've spent a lot more time with, but she's only 10. So that's coming into. I've got my seatbelt on, and I know it was hard.
So did you say to your 14-year-old daughter, "This is a song I've written about you," and play her, "I'd Rather Be Lonely"?
No, I didn't do anything as provocative as that. I wrote the song, and then as an afterthought, I might have mentioned that, you know, that's about you, don't you? She seems to enjoy it.
How do your family members and wives, ex-wives, feel about you writing all these pretty personal songs about them? And a lot of people who've been following you over the years know who the characters are.
Well, again, my experience is that people are delighted to have songs written about them, even if they're almost exposés or very personal. They haven't voiced a lot of objections, at any rate, my family members and as you say, exes. You have to, you know, one of the rules is you have to write about what you know about. And I have a tendency, or have in the last few years at least, really focused a lot on autobiographical stuff.
I'm going to ask you to do a song from the new album called Hitting You. It's a kind of song that I imagine is very difficult to write. Why don't we hear it? Then we could talk about why I think it must have been very difficult to write it, because you don't hear a lot of songs about a subject like this. Do you want to introduce it in any way before you play it?
Well, it's about Martha, the daughter. Whereas I'd Rather Be Lonely was a kind of lighter thing, but this is a pretty heavy song. The song explains itself, really. Long ago I hit you. We were in the car. You were crazy in the back seat. It had gone too far. I pulled the auto over and I hit you with all my might. I knew right away it was too hard. I'd never make it right. I was aiming for your buttock, but I struck your outer thigh. You had on a bathing suit, and right before our eyes, suntan skin turned crimson where the hand had hit. My palms stung from hitting you so hard that I hurt it. Against the law in Sweden, charges can be filed. Here it's all too common. A parent hits a child. On your face I saw the shock, and I saw the pain. Then I saw the look of fear, the fear I'd strike again. Then I saw your anger, your defiant pride. Then I saw one tear drop, the rest you kept inside.
I said I was sorry, I tried to clean the slate. With that blow I'd sown a seed, I saw it was too late. These days things are awful between me and you. All we do is argue like two people who are through. I blame you, your friends, your school, your mother and MTV. Last night I almost hit you, that blame belongs to me. Long ago I hit you, we were in the car, you were crazy in the backseat. It had gone too far. I pulled the auto over and I hit you with all my might. I knew right away it was too hard, I'd never make it right.
It's a wonderful song, and I can't think of another one like it. I can't think of another song about a parent hitting their child and regretting it.
Yeah.
Why is it really unique to write a song like that? I don't think it lends itself to most pop song. Most pop songs are about, first of all, pretty simple subjects,
yeah.
not something as emotionally complicated as what's happening in that song.
I think the thing that, for me, the interesting thing was that it was written from the point of view of the perpetrator,
yeah,
rather than the victim. When I wrote the song, and actually Martha was the first person that I sang it for, because that was a case where I called her in and I said, I want you to hear this. It's about you, and I'm interested in what you... And she knew all the events, including the recent event of almost hitting her. She liked the song and felt that it was, you know, on the money, so to speak. But I was hesitant. I went out and I started to play, and I was wondering, when you play it in a club for people, there's kind of a queasy thing that happens in the audience. People really don't quite know how to react to it. And after the show, this young woman, one of the waitresses in this club up in someplace up in Massachusetts, came up and said, she was about 23 or something, and she said, "Boy, that song about hitting your kid, God, that's..." Whew. And I said, "Yeah, did your dad hit you or did your mom hit you?" And said, "No, I have a couple of kids, and every once in a while I lose it and haul off and hit them." And that's when I knew that's where it was going to get people, not from the point of view of the victim, but the point of view of the hitter rather than the hittee, so to speak.
How well did your daughter remember that first time when
the incident with the bathing suit? And
I mean, obviously it had a really big effect on you. Did it have that big effect on her?
I don't think it did.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it isn't as though I hit her a lot of times. It had, surely she probably... She may have remembered it, but I was the one who remembered it the most, I think.
You know what I also like about the song? The first time you hear it, and, you know, you, the main character, is turning around and hitting someone in the back seat in a bathing suit, you're not sure that it's going to be a child. You think maybe it's a lover or a wife, and you really don't know what's going
Esther Williams,
to happen. Esther Williams,
like
yes. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, your songs do that. They have stories that are kind of, it's interesting to hear the story unfold, but it's very different from, say, the folk ballad tradition, you
uh-huh.
know? Well, I'll stop.
Yeah.
Well, why get myself deeper into this? If you're just joining us, my guest is Loudon Wainwright. He's got a new album, and the song he just sang is on it. The album's called History, and he's here in the studio performing some of the songs from it. We'll be back after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is singer and songwriter and guitarist Loudon Wainwright.
The liner notes to the album are kind of like a family album. There's photos of you.
Yeah.
There's even an article about how you used to be a football... Well, it's not about how you used to be a football star. It was written when you were a football star in what, your private school?
I went to a boarding school in Middletown, Delaware. And I was, that year, I was the high scorer in the conference. Yeah, the headline in the article says, Wainwright, high scorer. I love the... I had a kind of a romantic slant to it, I thought, you know, as if I'd done well at some of the school dances with Miss Porter's or something like that.
It's hard for me to think of Loudon Wainwright, football star.
That was the one sport that I was kind of good at. And the rest of the, I got kicked off the baseball team for smoking, I think, in 1964 or something.
For smoking tobacco?
Smoking tobacco. The other stuff came later.
In the liner notes, you also have a letter from January of 1967 that you wrote to your parents, and I'm going to read it. It says, Dear Mom and Dad, I've stopped over for a couple of days in Lawrence, Kansas, en route to San Francisco. I left Pittsburgh on the 15th of this month. I feel good, everything fine, and I will get in touch very soon. Haven't we all written that letter?
Yeah.
The places might have been different, but the...
I was going to college at Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and I dropped out of college and hitchhiked across the country to get there for that summer of love.
Did you get there in time?
I was there. Well, it was turning into the autumn of discontent, I think, you know, but it was a fun time.
What was going on between you and your parents when you wrote this letter? Did your father want you to stay in school? Was he upset that you dropped out and you were heading toward the summer of love?
Yeah, my son, Rufus, is just dropping out of McGill, and I'm upset and angry about it, too. I think that it's a normal thing. You don't know what they're going to do when they just say, the hell with it, I'm going to be Jack Kerouac or hitchhike across the country, or I have no money. When I started to... And then there was about a year and a half where I didn't do anything but bum around and was a kind of a hippie. Then when I started to write songs, because my father was a writer... And then he started to hook into it and say, well, this is kind of interesting. And then when I started to earn some money, he asked if he could borrow some.
No. Your father was an editor and a writer for
Life magazine, yeah.
You took off from school in 67, but you didn't start writing songs till around 68.
68, yeah.
So what got you started?
Well... you know, there was a kind of a folk music thing, boom. Actually, that had happened a few years earlier in the early 60s, you know, with the Newport Folk Festival and Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and all those, where folk music, you know, acoustic guitar music was the big music, really. So I had played the guitar and sung and done songs that those people had done. But in 68, I was... living in Rhode Island, I think working in a boatyard, and I wrote a song on a borrowed guitar about some lobster fisherman that I met. It was a very pretentious, silly song.
Great, play us a chorus of it.
Oh God, I can't
on,
do it.
On.
I don't
oh,
remember
no.
it. I honestly can't. I'm not. It's not Terry. It's not that I.
That's a protective device.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mind capsizes at the thought.
I'll let you get away with it.
All right.
So you wrote a pretentious song.
Right. And then I proceeded to write a number of other pretentious songs. I was thinking, wow, I'm writing songs. I'm a songwriter. I thought I was going to be an actor because I'd studied acting at Carnegie Tech. But lo and behold, it turned out I was a songwriter.
You have a song called A Father and a Son that's about you as an adult dealing with a teenage son.
Yeah, that one that's dropping out of college now.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah.
tell me what was on your mind when you wrote this song.
Well, a lot of the songs, let me think what was on my mind. Again, it's that thing of, I have another song, an older song called Your Mother and I, where I'm explaining to a child about her mother and the splitting up, the breakup of the marriage. And this song is addressed to my son, who's 18, about, you know, the difficulty that we're having. And then I bring in the difficulty that I had with my own father and actually throw in a whole bunch of other relatives, too, including his maternal grandfather. I don't know who, there's a bunch of relatives in there.
Let me ask you to do the song for us.
All right.
This is Loudon Wainwright, and the song he's about to perform is also featured on his new album, History.
When I was your age, I was just like you, and just look at me now, I'm sure you do. But your grandfather was just as bad, and you should have heard him trash his dad. Life's no picnic, that's a given. My mom's mom died when my mom was 7. My mom's father was a tragic guy, but he was so distant, nobody knows why. Now your mother's family, you know them. Each and every one a gem, each and every one a gem. When I was your age, I was a mess. On a bad day, I still am, I guess. I think I know what you're going through. Everything changes, but nothing is new. And I know that I'm miserable, can't you see? I just want you to be just like me. Boys grow up to be grown men, and then men change back into boys again. You're starting up and I'm winding down. Ain't it big enough for us both in this town? Say it's big enough for us both in this town. When I was your age, I thought I hated my dad, and that the feeling was a mutual one that we had. We fought each other day and night. I was always wrong, and he was always right. But he had the power, and he needed to win. His life half over, mine about to begin. I'm not sure about that Oedipal stuff, but when we were together, it was always rough. Hate is a strong word. I wanna backtrack. The bigger the front, the bigger the back. The bigger the front, the bigger the back. Now you and me are me and you, and it's a different ball game, though not brand new. I don't know what all of this fighting is for. We're having us a teenage middle-aged war. I don't wanna die and you wanna live. It takes a little bit of take and a whole lot of give. Never really ends, though each race is run. This thing between a father and a son. Maybe it's power, push and shove. Maybe it's hate, probably it's love. Maybe it's hate, probably it's love.
Loudon Wainwright. Did you play that one for your son after you wrote it?
Yeah, he's heard it.
What did he think?
I think he likes it.
Is this a way for you to
communicate with my children?
Yeah, exactly. Can you say things through your songs that you wouldn't just sit down and talk at
well,
the
I think
kitchen
it is,
table?
Probably. You know, I think, writing songs and singing songs and is probably the best thing that I can do as a person. Everything else is I don't do as well, including order breakfast. So, and it's a condensed way of doing it, and it's musical, and they're musical, and it is a way to say something or give them something.
Our concert with Loudon Wainwright will continue in the second part of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Coming up, we continue our concert with Loudon Wainwright, featuring songs from his new album, History.
I see people in love and I don't know why. They can't seem to fight it and they don't even try. Guess it's because it makes the world go round. Now we're spinning through space on shaky ground. I see people in love and I'm glad I'm not. It's just a disease and thank God I ain't got it. I see him holding hands, it makes me wince. Trying to turn that frog into a prince. Ah, movie star smooching in another movie. Kid turns away, says it's yucky that kid knows something that the grown-ups don't. When the kid grows up after that, the kid wants.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Ann Taylor. In Somalia, French forces manning a roadblock near the capital fired on a truck trying to get through. Two people were killed and seven others were injured in the first casualties since the military operation began. NPR's Deborah Wong reports from Mogadishu.
Officials say that French troops fired upon the truck as it ran through the roadblock at high speed. The truck then crashed into a building. The driver and one other man were killed. One Somali who arrived at the scene shortly after the shooting said passengers told him the bus's brakes failed as it approached the roadblock. French troops set up their barricades this morning, where they rather aggressively stopped and searched cars for weapons. Onlookers applauded the troops when they first appeared, but by the end of the day, many were complaining about the French tactics. U.S. soldiers tried to assist the French in controlling the large and unruly crowds, but with little success. One U.S. Marine complained the troops were badly outnumbered and in dire need of reinforcements. I'm Deborah Wong in Mogadishu.
Meanwhile, two warlords in Somalia have announced that they will meet tomorrow with a U.N. official, and a day later, U.S. troops will move to take control of a key town where fighting continues. A convoy of trucks carrying food will travel 200 miles from the capital to get aid to people who are starving. Before this, food convoys had been looted by armed bands in Somalia. During 2 years of factional fighting, some 300,000 people have died. President-elect Bill Clinton has named Washington and Wall Street insiders to top economic jobs in his administration. NPR's John Idstey reports.
During a news conference in Little Rock, the president-elect made official what had been widely reported in recent days. He named Senator Lloyd Benson of Texas as his choice for Secretary of the Treasury. Benson is viewed as cautious and conservative, with a gentlemanly demeanor befitting the Treasury post. Benson's chief deputy will be Wall Street investment banker Roger Altman. Mr. Clinton chose California Congressman Leon Panetta to be the White House budget director. Panetta's deputy will be Alice Rivlin, former head of the Congressional Budget Office. Both are strong advocates of reducing the federal deficit. Finally, Mr. Clinton turned to Robert Rubin, the co-chairman of Goldman Sachs, the big Wall Street firm, to coordinate economic policy for the new National Economic Council. Clinton's conservative choices suggest he wants a team that can help him sell his agenda for economic change to Congress and Wall Street. I'm John Idstey in Washington.
Officials of Germany, Spain, Britain, and Italy have all agreed to continue to work on a new fighter plane, but one not as advanced as first planned. Earlier this year, Germany had threatened to get out of the project because it felt it was too expensive. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials moved down nearly 12 points to close at 3,312.19 in very heavy trading. This is NPR News. In Bosnia, as fighting continues around the capital, supplies of bread are running low. For the fourth day in a row, there is no power or running water in Sarajevo, and food shipments have been cut. A UN patrol of armored personnel carriers came under heavy fire in central Bosnia, but there were no injuries reported. Aid flights to the capital have been stopped for more than 1 week now after two transport planes were fired upon. There is only one bakery operating in the capital, and because of low supplies of both fuel and flour, there is now only enough bread to supply hospitals and refugees. In Moscow, the Russian government continued in crisis today. President Boris Yeltsin has proposed bypassing the Russian Congress of People's Deputies and going directly to the people in a vote on the future of his economic reforms. NPR's Mike Schuster reports.
The Congress of people's deputies continued to meet throughout the day today after Boris Yeltsin launched a withering attack on it, charging that the deputies were attempting to turn themselves into the all-powerful rulers of Russia. But there was a clear sense of drift as members of both the Congress and of Yeltsin's government sought to find some way out of the constitutional crisis gripping Russia. Late in the day, there was much talk of a compromise, but little detail about what it might entail. Russia's chief judge had offered to mediate between the president and the parliament, and it was believed meetings would be held late into the night. Yeltsin appealed directly to the nation to hold a referendum on the future of reform and the future of his presidency. If the voters side with him, he wants new parliamentary elections in late March. If they side with the Congress, he says he is willing to face the voters himself in a new presidential election. I'm Mike Schuster in Moscow.
The government says that new claims for jobless benefits dropped in the latest reporting period by some 38,000. The Labor Department says in the week ending November 28th, new jobless claims came to 324,000. It was the eighth time that claims had gone down in 10 weeks. This is NPR News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. We're going to continue our concert with Loudon Wainwright. Most of the songs he's performing are featured on his new album, History. When we left off, he had just played his song, A Father and a Son, about the fights he's been having with his teenage son and how they remind him of the fights he used to have with his own father. You know, in the song you say that you want your son to be exactly like you, but when he is like you in terms of, say, dropping out of college, is that something that you want or that upsets you? I mean, when you see the things echoing in his life that you did that upset your father and now they're upsetting you.
Well, it's the legacy, you know. It's you become your father, you know, you become the person you rebel against, and that's the rich tapestry of life, is you're stuck in this kind of ongoing lineage, dysfunctional, but good things too. You know, I mean, and it's even, you know, you see your kid, you notice the way that they slouch or sit, and then you catch a glimpse of yourself and you see, you know, it's all kinds of mirrors, you know, just back and forth.
Do you ever go through this thing that you have no right to tell him it's a bad thing to drop out of school or whatever because you did it too?
Well, he reminds me of that very quickly, of course. You know, you can tell by the expression of, yeah, right, what about you? And because I've chronicled all my misadventures and he knows about them, I mean, he's going to be fine.
A lot of the things that you do chronicle in your life tend to be the more difficult parts, you know, people who've, things that make you angry, things that make you very sad.
Mm-hmm.
Fewer songs, I think, about kind of pure romantic love or
Colorado Mountain type songs.
Oh, you got a lot of those.
Yeah. We'll leave those to Mr. Denver, shall we?
But, I mean, there is a song on your new album that it's a beautiful song about your late father who died about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And It's much more of a pure love song in a lot of ways than most of the songs that you write.
Yeah. Well, as I sang in the last song, you know, my father and I had a difficult relationship, but obviously when somebody dies that's so important, like a parent or a family member, or you know, anybody that you're close to, I guess. You know, the purer feelings come out, you know, and then a lot of the anger subsides. It doesn't go away. I mean, it just subsides for a moment. And this song, is a song of kind of regret, at least the first two thirds of it. And then, you'll hear what happens in the third verse, something nicer.
Well, let me ask you to play the song.
Okay. Sometimes I forget that you've gone. You've gone and you're not coming back. And it's hard to believe you're still not here. What's left behind disputes that fact. Closet's still full of your clothes and your shoes. Your bookcase still holds all your books.
It's as if all you'd done was to go out of town. You'll be back soon, that's just how it looks. But your suitcase is empty. It's right here in the hall. That's not even the strangest thing. Why would you leave your wallet behind? Your glasses, your wristwatch and ring. Your glasses, your wristwatch and ring. Sometimes I forget that you've gone and that we'll never see you again. I think for a moment I gotta give him a call, but I can't now, I realize then. For lunch at the usual place, at the place where we always would go. And there was something I wanted to tell you so bad, something I knew that you'd want to know. Oh, go by myself to our old haunt, but that seems such a strange thing to do. The waiters would wonder what was going on. Why weren't you there? Where were you? Why weren't you there? Where were you? Sometimes I forget that you've gone. I remember and I feel the ache. How could it have happened? How could it be? It's not true, there must be some mistake. Mementos, memories, tell me what good are they? No, they're not much to have and hold. But it's true that you've gone and you're not coming back. This world seems so empty and cold. But sometimes something happens and it doesn't seem strange. You're not far away, you're near. Sometimes I forget that you have gone. Sometimes it feels like you're right here. Right now it feels like you're right here.
That's a really moving song. How long after your father died did you write that?
Well, I got to work on it right away. I mean, since I'm a songwriter, you know, when something big happens, my first instinct is to write about it. And I knew that some way or somehow I had to do something in that way. So it's a couple of weeks, I'd say.
I think what makes that song work particularly well is the context that, well, the context that you've performed it on the show and the context that it is on the new album, because it's right after the song about the problems you're having with the teenage mm-hmm. son, in which you reflect on all the difficulties you've had with your father.
Yeah.
Then you feel like, oh boy, what a rough relationship they must have had. And then you hear the other side of it, how much you miss him now that he's gone, and how much you obviously, you know, loved him all along, even though you also really had a lot of trouble with him. Mm-hmm. But that just really works beautifully.
Yeah.
Loudon Wainwright is my guest. He's performing some songs from his new album, and the new album is called History. We'll be back after this short break. This is Fresh Air. I guess a songwriter, singer, and guitarist, Loudon Wainwright. There's a picture of, I guess it's you and your father, sitting on a couch together on the back of your liner notes. Mm-hmm. When was that taken?
Well, I had a beard, a red beard then.
Yeah.
My beard is gray now, so.
Even he had a beard.
Yeah, he had a beard. I would say that might have been 74, 75, mid-70s.
Why did you include it?
I don't know. Again, I was going through all this stuff. You know, there were lots of pictures of him and me. But if you look at the picture, you people out there in radio land, just pick up your liner notes and look at the picture. We're kind of matching each other. Our feet, I think I have my right leg over my left, and he has his opposite. And almost like the soles of our feet are touching. And again, it was that thing of you see your kid and he slouches the same way. There's a similarity, a real connection. We both have beards. I have a hat on.
And you're sitting on opposite ends of the couch.
Yeah, there's a lot of space
away.
In between us.
Well, what did it mean to you when you were growing up to have your father's name, to be Loudon Wainwright III? It's always like walking around saying son of all the time.
It bugged the hell out of me.
Well, and your father had a pretty well-known name because he was with Life magazine.
Yeah, it was part of the problem. I mean, and again, we had a kind of a competitive relationship, so I always felt a little annoyed about that. I went to the boarding school that I went to, he went to, and at that time he was quite famous in the mid-60s. So it bugged me, but in fact... You know, when someone important to you gets ill, sometimes you want to get in there and try to resolve stuff that you didn't have resolved. And I can remember once having a conversation with him when he was sick with cancer in the hospital, and I wanted to get this off my chest. I said, you know, Dad, you were the person that encouraged me to use the third, Loudon Wainwright III, you know, that kind of pretentious, preppy moniker. And he said, oh, yeah? He said, yeah, because you said that Nanny, that's his mother, would feel that the memory of her husband would somehow be diminished. And I said, oh, and then he said, oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I did encourage you to do that. I said, but, Dad, you were always Loudon Wainwright. You never used Junior or the second. And there was this kind of silence. And then I felt horrible because I'm staring down at this man in this bed. And then he said, well, it's okay. You can have the name when I die.
Oh, let me pick up the record. And it says Loudon Wainwright III.
Right. I decided to keep the name. It's my name, and I'm proud of it. But I get back at him because I credit him. There's a song on the record called Handful of Dust, which he wrote most of. And I say it was written by Loudon Wainwright III and Loudon Wainwright II. So I got my little revenge there.
Well, what was his reaction when you told him this and he was very sick?
He called for a nurse and had me sent from the room. No. I don't know. I mean, it was a calmer conversation than that. But it's one of those little things, you know, that you have with your parents or with your whoever it is. It's just bugged me all these years. And, it is kind of a pretentious name, Loudon Wainwright III.
More with Loudon Wainwright in 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. Let's see what's coming up on All Things Considered. Noah Adams is with us. Hi, Noah.
Hi, Terry. Deborah Wong and Deborah Amos report from Mogadishu, Somalia tonight. Margot Adler has a story from Fort Drum, New York. That's the home base for many of those going to East Africa. Elizabeth Arnold reports on President-elect Bill Clinton's choices for Treasury Secretary, Senator Lloyd Benson of Texas. And also Congressman Leon Panetta has been named as budget director, nominated for that. Other choices as well announced today. Elizabeth Arnold has that story. John Burnett reports from Texas on what might happen to Senator Lloyd Benson's seat there. And we'll talk with Reverend Don Prang in the southwestern Virginia community where the coal mining accident happened this past week. 7 miners have died. 1 remains missing.
Thanks, Noah. That and more on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. Back to our concert with Loudon Wainwright. Well, we've gotten kind of heavy into your life during this interview, and the songs are about your life. So I'm going to ask you to kind of get out of your life for a second. And this is sometimes something I sometimes like to do when a songwriter's in the studio with us, and that is I'd like to ask you to play an excerpt of a song that you didn't write but that you really love. Not a new song, but a song from the past or your past. What would you want to do?
How about this one? You know what it is right away, don't you, from that lick? I got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I got the month of May. I guess you say, what can make me feel this way? It's my girl I'm talking about, my girl. I got so much honey, the bees all envy me. Yeah, I got a sweeter song than the birds in the trees. I guess you're gonna say, can make me feel this way. It's my girl I'm talking about, my girl. I could go on and on and on.
Oh, that's wonderful. Did Motown and soul music have a big effect on you?
Well, Smokey sure did. Yeah, I guess it did. You know, growing up and watching Dick Clark, and great. This is a great song. Great song.
When you're hanging around the house, do you often play other people's songs, or do you mostly work on your own?
I mostly, you know, focus on my own cheesy little life and write about my own stupid, insignificant problems. But you know, I have a bunch of songs that I love to sing, you know, folk songs or some rock and roll songs or R&B.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming and doing this concert with us. It's really been a pleasure, and I love the new record.
Well, thanks.
Thanks so much for being here.
I've enjoyed being here.
My guest has been Loudon Wainwright, and his new album is called History. And Loudon, would you play us out with something?
How about a little of this? It's not strange, no mystery. You and I are history. I've put up my protective wall. It's 4 feet thick and 10 feet tall. Ten feet tall and 4 feet thick. Granite.
Concrete, steel, and brick. Protection for you, understand. The little boy, the inner man. Boys kiss the girls, then make them cry. It's a man's job, that is why. And when you cry, you're just a clone of every woman I've known. And every Harry, Dick and Tom gets all of this shit from his mom, who was unhappy. Mom was sad because of a wall that Dad had. And once it's up, it won't come down. Mom's a queen and Dad's a clown. It's not strange, no mystery, that you and I are history. It's 4 feet thick and 10 feet
Loudon Wainwright. He has a new album called History. Fresh Air's senior producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director is Joyce Lieberman. Audrey Voblaitis recorded our concert. Naomi Person directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by this and other NPR member stations. Additional support comes from the George Gund Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about the culture and history of Somalia with its best-known novelist, Nuruddin Farah. He's now living in exile in Nigeria. He started out writing in English before Somalia had a written language of its own. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.